Chapter 20. Leia had barely stopped moving or giving orders since Mara had transmitted the information that Dasid Kriar was actually Nomanor, the unmasked firebrand from Romamul, and a Yuuzhan Vong. Breathless from running to the research building and back, she sank into a chair in her communication center, near the main gate and quarantine area. C-3PO stood at another terminal, running duplicate analyses of every lab result Kriar had ever reported. How much of the reclamation had he sabotaged, she wondered. All that work, that sense of accomplishment, a future for exiled refugees. Had he planted destructive organisms out there? And there's the source for our white eyes, Han's voice said over the comlink. He'd hidden the Millennium Falcon in plain sight, on a nearby bluff. Selkor had left a pile of anthracite out there for emergency fuel, and the Falcon, now matte black, all but vanished from view. According to the best current reports, the Yuuzhan Vong did not seem to have sensors that would detect it. "And we've still got over 1,000 people in quarantine. You know," she said, "the simple fact that Nomanor's here makes this world look more like a target than a haven."
"Don't get excited yet, sweetheart."
"The Yuuzhan Vong didn't invade Romamul," Rhonda insisted.
The Hutt pressed himself against a wall, cringing and flexing his little hands. She'd thought about locking him up permanently. It didn't feel right, though. The Hutts were also refugees. She would never trust him again, but she wanted him where she could watch him. She was determined to accord him the same sympathy and respect she'd give, say, a Ronat. So she allowed him limited freedom. And an escort. Bespican. Han must have overheard.
"They didn't have to. They just stood back and watched the locals burn it to a cinder. And look how far he's gotten with the Duros."
C-3PO bent over his console, silent, as ordered. He'd recited the odds of annihilation until she finally threatened to shut him down.
"Going to talk to the Duros High House?" Han asked.
"Soon as I can get a clear transmission to Coruscant, and after I make sure our people down here haven't been talked into murdering each other. Last night I had 3 reports of Rin out skulking."
"What kind of reports?"
"Conflicting. I put out that they're probably just rumors. Somebody trying to start trouble." She hesitated. "Where is Droma, anyway?"
"He's around."
"Skulking," Leia concluded, and this time she was glad.
"Han, we do need contingency plans for evacuation. We're warehousing 6 ships that Selkor didn't want to risk taking up again. I don't think Jaina finished checking them out. Tell Droma—"
"If Selkor mothballed ships here, they're ours now."
C-3PO's head swiveled. He pantomimed frantically with both hands.
"It's all right," Leia told him sternly. "Good, Han. We're down to saving as many lives as possible. Already. Start putting people on board, especially the Vors."
"And all the droids we can find," he said. "If the Vong get here, there's scrap. That includes Goldenrod. Get him over here. In pieces, if you have to."
Leia turned down the comlink.
"Go on, 3PO," she said gently. "Get shipboard before the Yuuzhan Vong show up. We need you."
He was already shuffling out the door.
"So Admiral What has a soft spot for injured military personnel?"
Mara asked softly.
"Seems to."
Jaina sounded fully awake again, lying on one of the hostel's other cots. The moment Luke and Anakin had gone out on their reconnoiter, Jaina had fallen instantly and blissfully asleep. Fighter pilots have it. Mara got up off her cot, feeling considerably less chipper, thinking about things she should have done before she rested.
At that rate, of course, she never would lie down.
R2, get me a link to Admiral Watt's office.
R2-D2 whistled a smart salute. Shortly, an aide's image appeared over the in-room holoboard.
You have a situation developing, Major.
Mara sketched out a warning. The military aide answered gruffly.
You may think our people are guilty of complicity with the Peace Brigade, he said. That is not true. We disliked being told to open our doors to refugees, but we would never conspire to sell their lives. We will call for a prompt investigation of Cordura shipping.
There might not be time for that, Mara said. Get your battle group on alert.
Luke and Anakin returned shortly with the bad news about Thrinny Vey and the quickly changing mood of Buru City. And dinner. Mara dug in.
Then we'd better get Jason and go for Anakin's X-Wing.
Good,
Anakin said, half a nutrient bar muffling the word. Mara eyed Luke over a half-eaten Crow-Yi drumstick.
Jaina and I can fire up the shadow while you and Anakin spring Jason.
Luke shook his head slowly. They're watching me for now, but they don't know Jaina and Anakin quite so well. Mara frowned.
What are you saying?
You and I can create a diversion. There have been demonstrators outside Braren's home, down at the plaza. We'll go talk with them. Openly. While we do, Jaina and Anakin can slip in and pick up Jason. We'll rendezvous at the dock.
R2-D2 bleeped.
Okay, Luke said. We won't leave you alone. You're with Mara and me.
Whatever happens, he added softly, no Duros are to be hurt unless it's life and death for us. Anakin, Jaina, understand? You'll follow about 10 minutes behind us.
They nodded. After washing up, Luke and Mara descended the lift.
How's Jason's mental state?
Mara murmured.
Have you contacted him since?
She let her voice trail off. He didn't answer when I comlinked half an hour ago. Braren's people might have taken it away. And he wasn't going to intrude on Jason's emotions from the distance? Mara nodded. All along, she'd advised Luke to use the Force cautiously. She'd never dreamed Jason would take it this far. Again, they rode hoverbikes. Luke rented one with a sidecar. He helped R2-D2 wriggle into place before he climbed aboard. Mara rented a second bike, a two-seater with room to carry Jason.
Ready,
she said, settling on the narrow forward saddle. She stayed half a length behind Luke, slightly to his right, flowing with inward traffic on the avenue. Under a bank of lights so high overhead that the illusion of daylight almost convinced Mara, Buru's central plaza was dominated by 4 tall housing stacks. The buildings rose as high as the diagonal braces, set up at mid-plaza like 4 long spokes of a wheel. A green park surrounded them. Along one building, a crowd had formed around a platform that was considerably taller than the one Mara saw at Port Duggan. From several directions, Duros were hurrying in on foot and by hoverbike. Luke swooped toward a parking stall near a pair of trees that drooped from their weight of dangling moss and vines. Mara left him to scout the situation and found another stall some distance away. She hoped her guesses were wrong. If the Yuuzhan Vong struck here, these Duros were probably just as dead as the refugees. Luke strolled to meet her. The wind had disheveled his hair and put color in his cheeks. She liked the effect, and she let her stare linger just long enough to make sure he got the message. An answering warmth blossomed up from the Luke place at the back of her mind.
Jason's up there, I take it?
She turned and eyed the building nearest the demonstrators. Obviously, their show was for his benefit. Now she recognized the Duros on stage. Braren's sister, Dusilla.
One alone is strength. One alone is unity.
Her voice, clearly audible as they walked out onto the plaza, fell silent.
Duros backed out of Luke and Mara's way, nodding their long heads and creating a path.
Mara knew full well that she and Luke were letting themselves be surrounded, but she didn't sense danger yet.
They approached the chest-high platform. Two larger, heavier Duros stood behind Drusilla, sporting brand-new Mersan blasters. No wonder Duros were backing away from her. Amused, Mara kept several paces distance from Luke. They might both need room to swing lightsabers.
Close by, Duros made shushing noises as Luke stepped into an open space below the platform.
An individual, alone, can be strong, he called back, and Mara was surprised by how well his voice carried.
Drusilla must have set up a transmission field so she could work the crowd.
But how much stronger are two? Luke asked. Who can watch out for each other?
Drusilla's lipless smile broadened.
The Jedi, she said, mocking him with a sing-song. The ultimate disciples of interdependence. You are weak because of your diversity. You pull in too many directions.
Mara would have challenged that statement, but Luke used it as a launch point. There are people all over the New Republic, diverse people, who desperately need help. Won't you set aside your frustrations for a little while and lend a hand to people weaker than yourself?
Behind Mara, there was a chorus of shouts.
Selkor had no business!
Refugees in our system make us bait for a Yuuzhan Vong strike! If you've come to Duro, hoping to bring us back in line,
Drusilla said, spreading her hands,
I think you can see you made a mistake.
No mistake, Luke insisted. Selkor has offered your home planet back, in exchange for your help shuttling goods down to its surface, for which your brother's shipping concern is being well compensated.
Her gray cheeks flushed darker. Luke went on.
Selkor is too thinly spread to set up its own shuttle ships. It's easier to bring in big freighters and count on your distribution network.
The Duros whistled him down. Mara glanced up at the housing stack, trying to sense Jason's presence behind any of the large round windows. He was there, all right, but she couldn't pinpoint the spot. R2-D2 stood where Luke had left him, between the sidecar bike and a blocky automated street cleaning unit, its massive sweeper arms folded up alongside the bulky digester. Jaina and Anakin were just arriving from separate directions. Jaina parked her bike and disappeared into the housing stack. Anakin slipped into the crowd and started pressing forward. Mara frowned. Those were not his orders. Drusilla raised her head.
Jedi,
she called,
have preached their philosophy of light and darkness, of knowledge and wisdom. And what have they given us? Violence and fear.
Murmurs surrounded Mara.
Domination! Suppression!
The murmurs grew louder. Luke's glance flickered sideways. He undoubtedly sensed Anakin coming, and that odd, elated determination the boy was broadcasting. Luke's chin firmed, making him look irritated, but just for a moment. Then his lips twitched.
How many of the New Republic's problems right now could be traced to the Jedi?
Drusilla called.
And how much of what you're saying, Mara wondered, could be traced to Nomanor?
Anakin reached the platform, set both hands on its edge, and vaulted into a force-boosted somersault. He came down between Drusilla's bodyguards, who reached for their blasters. Almost casually, Anakin swept one of the Duros off balance with his left foot. The other guard fired, but Anakin's lightsaber was already out. He diverted the shot, then swept in and sliced the blaster in two.
Stang the kid anyway. What was he trying?
Luke vaulted onto the platform, shouting, "That's not what we came here to do!"
To Mara's utter shock, Anakin spun around and dropped into a dueler's crouch.
"That's right!"
he shouted.
"This is what we came to do!"
As Luke drew his lightsaber, Anakin smiled sardonically. Mara backstepped. They were both out of their minds. Luke stepped in, sweeping his lightsaber in a wide arc, slow and flashy. Anakin parried gracefully, locked blades, and held the pose. Then she understood. Anakin was challenging Luke to stage a demonstration, taking advantage of people's fascination with lightsabers. She tended to forget that most citizens of the New Republic went their lifetime without seeing even one, let alone two at once, expertly handled. As Luke's green blade crossed Anakin's faint purple, she half-smiled. Duros all around her pushed toward the platform. She wondered if Luke would make a speech while he had their full attention. As Luke lightly pushed Anakin away, a Duros woman standing near Mara nudged her companion, smiled, and then turned back to watch. Mara sent out a force flicker herself, launching the second guard's Mersan out of his hands into a vine-draped tree. She ached to join them on the platform, but that would be pointless. She could accomplish more here as a sentry. Luke and Anakin moved through a half-dozen basic drills in order, trading the lead, dropping in and out of deep stances, rising into dramatic blocks. The upstaged Duros orator and her bodyguards backed away. One guard pulled out a comlink and turned his back. Mara didn't like that. Abruptly, Luke broke out of the classic sequence. Making a surprise rush, he swung low. To parry in place would send Anakin off balance. Instead, Anakin hopped back, locked blades, and stayed on his feet. Mara saw pride and praise in Luke's slight, somber nod. Anakin pressed the unchoreographed attack, following slashes with short, chopping strikes. Mara was struck by the intensity, the balance, the sheer accuracy of Anakin's use of the Force to anticipate Luke, pressing his attack beyond obvious blocks and parries. When Luke mounted a wild, sparkling offense, pushing Anakin past anything the young Jedi had faced before, Mara knew he too was impressed. She'd worried about the Solo brothers' rivalry. Now she saw that practicing against Jason, so similar in style, so different in execution, had matured Anakin tremendously. Only one problem. The crowd was growing, and as Drusilla's bodyguard returned his comlink to his belt, Mara guessed Luke's audience wouldn't remain unarmed for long. Jason was watching the crowd watch the practice duel when a faint tapping caught his attention. He pushed away from the transparisteel window. He'd never deactivated the listening devices in here, but now he had a hunch, not the Force, just a hunch, that with Luke, Anakin, and Mara in plain sight 12 floors down, this could be Jaina. He made a fast circuit, gathering the snoops before he touched the door's interior opening panel. It slid open, and his sister slipped through.
"Hey,"
she said. He poked his head out the door, glanced left and right, and spotted his guards, slumped comfortably against the wall. Shaking his head, he tossed the snoops onto one guard's lap, then stepped back into his room and sent the door shut.
"Hey," he answered. "Nice of you to visit."
She'd thrown on a vest over her brown flight suit and black utility belt. He also noticed the close-fitting cap.
"Great hair."
She glared at him. He'd left his own cap on the bedside.
"Speak for yourself. What are you doing here? Waiting for Hoth to melt?"
Vice Director Brarin did send down a message that Uncle Luke had been spotted out at the docks. "He wants to talk with us all. Want some cold Kroyi?"
"You've got to be kidding."
Jaina strode across to his window,
Instead of looking out, she stood alongside it and cautiously peered up, down, and to both sides. The only guards are in the hall. Were in the hall, he corrected himself. Doesn't look like they gave you any trouble.
As guards go, they weren't real impressive.
I think, he confessed, that their only real job is to let Brarin know if I decide to leave.
Jaina pointed down at the platform. He could plainly see the green and amethyst spark and flash of lightsabers engaging.
See that?
She demanded.
That's going on in your honor. A distraction so I can get you out. We're headed back down to Gateway.
Is it necessary? I'm waiting to talk to the Vice Director.
She whirled around.
Are you even marginally aware of what's going on around you?
How about you? He asked softly. How's the vision coming back?
Well, for one thing, I'd forgotten how big your nose and chin are getting.
He snorted softly. His features had matured this year. Hers had looked womanlike for 3 or 4 years. One of the temporary injustices of having a female twin.
Listen,
she said.
Aunt Mara and I just exposed a Yuuzhan Vong agent down at Gateway. And he nearly killed us both.
She snatched off her cap to reveal a synth flesh strip above her right ear.
And Uncle Luke just found connections between your precious Vice Director and the Peace Brigade.
Jason felt his insides shrink.
That's why Brarin's anxious to get a Jedi in custody? Because the Peace Brigade has figured out that the Yuuzhan Vong want to neutralize us?
Give the boy a medal. And meanwhile, you're just sitting here blind to it all. Aren't you listening to the Force at all? Can't you tell? Something's about to happen. Again.
He thrust both hands into his pockets, feeling guilty.
Actually, I decided to stop using it. Completely. Uncle Luke challenged me, and I'm tired, Jaina. If I can't fight darkness with darkness, then maybe I can't fight violence with violence. I just feel like I'm waiting for something to happen. Her eyebrows rose.
What's going to happen is another invasion, Jason, and you're coming with me, whether you want to or not.
She flipped back her vest and laid one hand on a holstered blaster. Startled, he sat down on the bed.
You'd make me come with you?
Jaina drew the blaster, and he saw that she'd set it for stun.
You may want to set yourself up as a tragic hero, she said, but it isn't going to happen. Yes, idiot brother, I would make you come.
He half smiled, almost relieved. The universe had been knocked out from under him, and his vision beckoned him to a destiny he didn't understand. But Jaina hadn't changed. She'd just matured.
I'll come, he said, reaching out one hand.
Going to shoot back if somebody shoots at us?
I guess I'll have to. But maybe nobody will.
He pulled out Gnosis's data card. We've been offered the use of a hover pod.
Whose?
Jaina's eyes narrowed.
A Sunesi?
One of those strange preachers?
Jason shrugged. I've never heard of one of them going to the dark side. Frowning, Jaina flipped her hand on the blaster's hand grip and gave it to him, then reached across and pulled a second blaster from her utility belt's cross-draw holster. Then she peered out the window again. Her frown slackened.
Uh-oh,
she said.
Maybe we aren't going anywhere.
If Luke had hoped to make a speech, it was too late. Mara heard someone behind her fire a weapon, a little Blastech DW-5 by the sound of it. Luke swept in and deflected the bolt. Mara spun around. Spotting the Duros gunman, she plunged through the crowd. Leaning her weight into his balance was easy. She threw him gently to the ground and disarmed him. Then she heard someone fire a deeper-pitched weapon. A shout went up, inarticulate, plainly hostile.
Mara didn't need to check her danger sense. Newly arrived agitators had turned a harmless crowd of fascinated spectators into a sharp-toothed beast of a mob. Duros, who'd looked friendly, almost knocked each other down, hurrying out of the middle of it. Someone grabbed her left arm. She stepped sideways and used his momentum to toss him almost casually against another Duros, who went down. Two more from behind. She crossed her arms through the leaders, ducked, and felt him slide over her back into his partner's face. She flexed her hands. She was sick of watching Luke and Anakin have all the fun anyway. It felt unconscionably good to cut loose. And with so many Duros close around her, they couldn't fire weapons without hitting each other. So it was hand to hand, and Mara could do that in her sleep. A high roundhouse kick, fueled by her fury over having to retreat from Nomanor, sent another holdout blaster up onto the tree limb. If she fell, though, her child could get hurt. She focused quickly and surely as each threat presented itself. Blaster after blaster flew into the vine-draped tree. A half-dozen Duros rushed her. She let them get close enough to grab, then leapt clear, aiming herself toward the street-sweeping machinery and R2-D2. Not far behind her back, she sensed another knot of closely controlled violence. Luke and Anakin, likewise headed out of the mob's center. Another crowd of Duros bore down on R2-D2. His domed head spun left, then right. He let out a frightened squeal. Mara took the offensive, using the Force to toss Duros aside. One of R2-D2's attackers made a grab. Mara saw the flash of an electric discharge, and the Duros jumped back. Another Duros tried to grab him, and R2-D2 shocked that one, too. Then a group of them clambered up the street-sweeping machine, and it roared to life. Jason and Jaina avoided the lift and tiptoed down the emergency stairs. With only two flights to go, Jason heard rustling noises below. He backed into Jaina, who donned her enhancement mask. The footsteps plainly were coming up toward them. Then the sound stopped. Jason pressed against the exterior wall, close to his twin. He double-checked the unfamiliar blaster, making extra sure it was set for stun. By the time he lowered it, Jaina was pushing away from the wall. She placed two hands on the banister, leapt gracefully, and vanished. Jason pounded down the next flight after her. He heard a blaster below his feet, and less than a second later, he spotted three Duros in Corduro shipping uniforms, two sprawled in the stairwell, one dashing for a door. Jason stunned that one. Jaina had already fallen past this level, leaping out of the stairwell's core, headed for a side door. Jason followed, not liking what they'd done. Not at all. This wasn't fair. He was Jedi, trained to fight to protect others. And himself. This way! He waved Jaina toward a service garage, then pressed the data card into a wall slot. A two-seat hover pod in the nearest row rose on its repulsors. The street sweeper swung out a long metal arm, aimed at R2-D2. Mara couldn't get there in time to stop it. R2-D2 flew into the air, and an angry cheer erupted. Behind R2-D2, Mara spotted a pod soaring off the housing complex's second floor. She confirmed Jason and Jaina on board, then stretched out to nudge Luke. He and Anakin were holding their own, keeping the Duros distracted, laying them limp on the pavement if necessary. Mara vaulted onto one of the hefty diagonal braces that rose up from street level. She made sure she had a good grip, then reached out with the Force toward R2-D2. He changed course in midair, swooping around like a blunt silver missile. Duros scattered out of his line of fall. The mob surrounding Luke and Anakin stampeded aside. Luke broke into a sprint, headed away from Jason and Jaina's escape route toward the hoverbike Mara had parked. Anakin followed, still gripping an ignited lightsaber. Mara guided R2-D2 toward them, then carefully set him down, facing in their direction.
Instantly, he extended his third tread and rolled forward. She exhaled heavily. The key to size matters not was realizing she hadn't lifted him at all. The force had energy to spare, but directing its flow still tired her. She dropped lightly onto her feet and then pounded after Luke. Right in front of her, Anakin deflected a dirt clod with his lightsaber.
"Get R2 hidden," she ordered him. "We'll draw them off."
Luke climbed onto the hoverbike and fired it up. Mara sprang onto the second seat. Luke took off so fast she had to grab him with both arms.
"Not exactly the distraction we had in mind," she puffed, setting her chin on his shoulder.
Anakin changed things a little. Not badly, though. Just a little hazy on the escape plan. He circled back, buzzed the crowd chasing Anakin and R2-D2, then headed up the nearest boulevard, toward a shopping strip. Mara craned her neck to look back. Anakin ducked around a building, out of her line of sight. The crowd came on, following Luke.
"How are we going to get to the shadow?"
Keeping one arm around Luke's waist, she corralled as much as possible of her streaming hair with the other hand.
"I'll think of something." "Think fast, Skywalker."
She knew how much he was enjoying this, but she was tired. She still couldn't say it, though.